I want to know is when you said you've been out always, what does that mean? You know, like how old, like when did you know that you were lesbian? You know what I mean?
It's not something I knew. It's just something that came natural, like, you know, when you're a girl. It's just, I guess it's just when you reach puberty, instead of liking boys, I hung around with boys. I like girls. The games you play, the games that children normally play at that age, instead of being the girls against the boys, it was me and the guys against the girls. It was just something that came naturally. I always liked girls. I like guys too. I'm not wrong. I love guys, especially the ones I can tell what to do. But as far as, you know, like I don't mind any of the sexual parts with guys or the love parts or anything, but my life I want to spend with a girl. They won't come. I mean, it's the boring moments of sitting at home watching television, reading the Sunday paper, talking about problems. I have nothing to say to a guy. I mean, we're in two different worlds. He don't care and I don't care about, you know. But with a girl, it's different. It's those moments alone that you have more in common.
I guess, like, when did you first, think about being a lesbian or hearing the word?
Didn't even know what it meant. I was about six with a plain doctor with a little girl next door. I mean, I probably did it before that, but I remember getting caught by my mother. Get my ass whipped. But you don't know what you're doing with a pencil. So that was all kids did that. I'm sure you played doctor. There just happened to be more girls in our neighborhood that were patients than were boys. Anyway, I'm boys, there was no place to stick the pencil. So, the second time I remember, I was about 11. My father sent me to a school, a private school, because he thought that, for whatever reasons he thought. Anyway, I got up in the middle of the night. I liked this girl. And I got up in the middle of the night to talk it over with her. Somebody blew us into the nuns. Sending me these all-girl places, thinking that it'd make a lady out of me. And that's why I never kicked. I was like, work. Ever been to an all-girls Catholic school? I mean, outside of the girls being beautiful, the hang-ups. Fantastic. And I'm just what the doctor ordered. Sterile. There's no sense that they can't get pregnant. They can't consider it fucking because I'm a girl. And they're just in their prime where they need someone. They need someone to love them. They need someone to love back. They're, I loved it.
Too late.
But after I got out of high school, I came back to Buffalo, and I got a job downtown, and I went out to lunch one day. I walked into a place called the Mardi Gras. That was it. That was it. I didn't even know what kind of place I was in. But my brother happened to pass by accidentally and see me in there. See, I had no idea what it was. It was in the middle of the afternoon, so it looked like every other bar in town. But my brother Tony happened to be going by, and he saw me in there, and he called my father, because he got worried right away. And my father came over and gave me all the information I needed. Do you know what kind of place you're in? There's lesbians hanging around there, and I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Until he said, what's the matter with you? Aren't you ever going to start acting like a girl? Right away, like he's talking. I says, oh, is that there? Is that where they're all hanging out? And then he says, I don't want to see you around there and the rest of those dives, that Mardi Gras, that this, and he started naming off names left and right. So, Friday night after work, got dressed in my cowboy outfit and headed for the Mardi Gras. From the Mardi Gras, I met people that took me to the carousel and the rest of the places around town. I said, shit, alone. I wasn't alone. There's 5 million like me out there, they just don't know it. I was all hiding.
Could you, like, you just mentioning some of the names of gods then, could you go, like, into, like, them, you know, and how they kind of disappeared and stuff like that?
There were a lot of them. The time I remember, there was two a corner. One in the middle of the block that was in the closet, like the 5 o'clock club. The 5 o'clock club was, you walk in and you think it was all businessmen, guys in raincoats, and you couldn't see them, you know, anything underneath them. No, but guys in raincoats and suit jackets, it was all men. And if a pretty girl walked in, they didn't even know she was alive, which usually you'd find some guy at least trying to buy you a drink in a place like that. And I couldn't figure it out. I didn't exactly know what the hell was going on there the first time I went in. It just happened to be not too far from where I was working. And someone told me it was a guy's joint. I didn't know there were guys. I thought they were just girls like that. I mean, I figured that all guys that were gay had to be fags, queens, you know? I didn't know they looked like everybody else. And some of the ones that look more like everybody else are worse. But what happened, I think, I'm not sure, but I think it was Robert Kennedy. I think it was Robert Kennedy that started this vice thing in Washington. They were going to clean up the world. Just half of it anyway. And Sedita got to be mayor, and they put the pressure on him. And I guess he had so much other shit going that the best bet was to get rid of the pressures that would have brought any kind of investigation, which was all the gay bars. And one by one, cops just walked in and ripped the license off the wall and said, that's it, you lose your license. And this liquor control board started revoking licenses for serving undesirables, which in the status, I think, it reads that undesirables is anyone who they feel is gathered together for immoral or illegal purposes. Which includes, I mean, some guy that just got out of jail that wanted to have lunch could be in a bar and get it closed down. If he had to be sitting with somebody else he was in jail with, I mean, it's stupid. An undesirable is anyone they say isn't allowed to have a drink in your place. And homosexuals are one of them. They feel that they gather together for immoral purposes, for pickups or for hustling or stuff like that. So most of the bars closed down and turned into restaurants, or guys just got out and before they lost their license to open other places. Then the great rip-offs came. After they sent us all into hiding, license expired. They turn their bar into a gay bar, and then they start charging $1, $2 to get in with the promise that it would be like a private club, which was a crock of shit. It was like a private circus. They charge us the $2 to be in there and then let their friends or neighborhood people in for nothing to stare at us. But I guess when the machine started, it started to open up a lot of eyes. That belonged just in order to drink after hours. It had a handful of people who knew it was a good idea and who really wanted to do something with it. And as soon as that handful got themselves together, they pulled out from the rest and they formed the Real Madison. See, we had a lot of bad shit connected with our name in the beginning because Jimmy was a rebel. I mean, all he wanted was an after-hours joint. All he wanted, and he wanted to aggravate the police. So everything, like he had Madison painted on his front window, and everything that went wrong with the place reflected on us. And we had a hell of a time getting him to take the name off the front window. When we finally moved out, we moved into a church. I mean, where do you go from that place? We had to go to a church. I mean, every cop in the city had it in for the name. So after he moved the name from the window, the place closed down completely, and then we started to build a reputation. We stuck to church dances, to legal licenses, to lawyers, to everything within the law.
So after that, did lots of bars start opening up, like after Madison started kind of getting stuff together?
After Madison got things together, we didn't need bars. I mean, the guys still tend to go to bars, because the guys, I mean, they're... I think they're more into picking up strangers, looking for but girls, like Madison would have dances and projects with girls, they're not into that stuff. Now and then after it closed, somebody might go down to a bar for a drink, but it was nothing like most of the bars in town are guys' bars. They're into that kind of thing. Most of the girls are more in settled lives, where if they do go out for a drink, they certainly don't want to go to a place where, you know, they got 20 million guys groping each other. And sometimes if they don't know who you are, they grope you. I mean, I've had it done to me a lot of times.
So, like, how do you compare that, like, with what's happening now with the bars? Like, you know, the downtown manor is closed, the hibachi room closed, I heard there's rumors around the Mikado's might close. Like what happened with Kennedy and see what's going on now.
No, these people are closing because of lack of interest. Because your women are getting out of the bar scene. They're getting closer together, and if they do go to bars, they certainly don't. I really think that inside of them, they don't want to share a bar with a bunch of fags. I mean, they want a girl's bar. And since it can't be done that way, or the people that run them aren't that concerned, the girls go there less and less, and your money is with the girls. A guy could go there and stand with one bottle of beer all night long. And most of the bars, they'll buy a bottle of beer, and that's it. They just don't put out a lot of money. Where if girls go there, they go for a social evening. I mean, you have a couple drinks, you sit and talk. You know, you're not busy the whole night stretching your neck to see who the hell you're going to go home with. And a lot of them, that's always been, like, I've been friends with quite a few of the guys that have owned bars a long time ago, and that's been their big kick, that they don't want guys there because the guys don't spend the money. They buy one bottle of beer and they stand against the wall, if they even buy one. Sometimes they just go in and stand against the wall. It's like a meat rack. But I think they're closing now because of lack of interest. They're not pulling in the money. It's not making it worth their while. I think if they got one sensible owner to open a place and do it right, they'd make a fortune. They'd make a fortune, especially if it had two rooms where they could have dinner in the back, or even after hours, close up the liquor part of it completely, serve coffee and rolls in the back.
Investment that New York City is a place called Bayou Flies, where upstairs you have dinner.
There's a lot of places like that in Pittsburgh. I'll tell you, when it comes to gay bars, Pittsburgh makes Buffalo. They have a place in Pittsburgh that has three floors. Mm-hmm. Like the first floor you go into is a regular bar. The second floor you go into is like, you go downstairs. The second floor upstairs is like a place where if you and your lover want to go out and have a drink, something to eat, and, you know, be served, that's where you go. Downstairs is if you're going to pick somebody up or do any dancing or stuff like that, it's like a disco downstairs. The second floor is just like a regular bar. You go and sit around and talk. The music isn't loud. And upstairs is candlelight. Just perfect.
Sounds really nice. Mentioning your family a little, you know, like about like some of the reactions that your father had towards what was going on in your life. Do you want to talk more about that? You know, like, did you ever tell him you were lesbian? Like, how was it?
No, it's, I don't come from a type of family that you tell them anything. My people are old country Italian Catholic. And there is nothing I could tell them. If it doesn't come from God, they're not listening to it. And since me and him never got along anyway, I know he's not going to be delivering any messages for me. I mean, the only thing you could tell them is, hey, what could I say? That's all I ever tell them, is what could I say? And the only reaction comes from my father. But the rest of the family, you're telling them.
What?
You tell them?
No.
No? Well, if you know any Italians, you're Jewish.
Yeah.
You're Italian. If you know any Italians, they'll all give you the same reaction. I mean, when the old man makes a decision, everybody follows it or totally ignores it. Like, I mean, the rest of them ignore me like I look like anybody else in the world. They just totally ignore my lifestyle and everything. See, because once they admit it exists, they have to make a decision on how they feel about it, and they'd rather not do that. Since the old man said he don't feel too good about the situation, you know, they don't want to disagree with him or agree with him. Nothing, they want to stay out of it. And as far as he's concerned, I died along with my mother years ago. He lost that little girl he sent away. He knows it. And he could hardly cope with the kid he got back. So he just totally ignores my existence. What are the neighbors going to say any longer if they just make believe you're not there?
So, like, do you see them now and stuff like that, or is that like it's like gone?
Do I see them? We might pass each other on the street or in the restaurant or something like that. I mean, I've sat this close to him in a restaurant. He's never looked my way on Allen Street. I mean, once in the half an hour that we were both in there at the same time, I caught him looking at me. I could see him up in the mirror when I looked up.
So you also mentioned that you left home like pretty early, that you came back from high school and stuff?
No, I left home. What happens while I was away, I was just coming back from reform school. And they thought that if they could get me out of the city, it would do better for me. I mean, because of my family circumstances and the mess their lives were in, they didn't find either my mother or my father fit for me. Not for someone my age. I was too easily impressionable and I had too many problems of my own. My sister had just gotten married. She married a state trooper out in Pittsburgh, and she had all the stability I needed to grow upright. A nice home, husband, you know, not just shit going on. No gay bars. They didn't know about the ones in Pittsburgh. They only knew about the ones in Buffalo. So, I went there to stay with her for the summer to see if maybe they could have my, I was awarded court here, if they could have all this jurisdiction moved to Pennsylvania so I could grow up there and go to high school. While I was gone, my mother died. So, there was no reason for me to come back. I mean, that was the main influence they wanted to remove me from. And since she was dead, that's where I stayed. My sister automatically assumed responsibility for me. So I stayed in Pittsburgh until I graduated from high school. And my old man came to see me, and everything was going good. And he said, you know, like, I want you to go to college, and I'll, you know, pay for it, and when you get out, I'll buy you a business or have a nice job for you, anything you want. You know, maybe get married. You don't even have to get married if you want to. Get yourself a nice boyfriend. You know, that'd make him happy. He didn't care if I married the guy. Just so it was a guy. So, I wasn't going for that. For one thing, I couldn't go to school another 4 years to... It's not what I wanted. There's nothing I want to be in life that school could teach me. I mean, all it would do is confuse the ideas I already had or give me some bullshit out of a book, which I believe what you're going to be has got to come from here. There's no book in this world that's going to tell you how to live. It's going to tell you how somebody lived, how somebody reacted, and what somebody did. But it can't tell you how to react to a situation. So I said, no, that's crappy shit. And I could never be me. I mean, if I let him buy me with this idea, I would owe him the rest of my life. I'd have to go on wearing dresses and go on dating guys and have him check out every guy I went out with. Have him have a fuse if I stayed out past 12 o'clock. I just wasn't about to do that and end up like my sister. Married a schmuck that had a lock on the telephone. That kept money in a book so she had to write down every penny she spent.
Jesus.
And there she was, 25 years old, two kids and another one on the way. Hating every minute of it because daddy wanted her to do it. Oh, bullshit. Wasn't about to put up with that. So I took my $50 I got from graduation and I took my suitcase. My brother-in-law was the only little glad one to see me go. I mean, he wanted me the hell out of there before I wised up my sister. He said, you're filling her head with all these ideas. Why don't you go out and live by yourself? You graduated now. He says, okay. So I went out on my own. And there I was, out to conquer the world. And the first thing I did was get myself in some kind of mess of trouble with the cops. And there I was, calling up daddy and saying, get me out of this trouble. I promise I'll be good. Just get me out of it this time, because this time it was something serious. So he says, all right, I'll get you out of it. He says, come home. Come home and we'll see what happens from here. So I came home and I said, well, that scared hell out of me. I mean, that trouble I got into was scared the living hell out of me because they were talking like 10, 15 years. So Jesus, you know, like, I mean, it was me and two boys that were, I was only 19, they were under 18. I was only 18. They were 16 and 17. And they had broke into a house and stolen some guns. They didn't know what to do with them, so I took the guns and hit them. And since it involved a man act, that's a felony charge with minors, they would have pushed everything off on me. So I said, Jesus, no. I said, Dad, you gotta do something, man. I don't even know what's going on. All I know is a kid gave me a rifle, so I hung on to it. So he says, well, is that all there is to it? I always tell him that's all there was to everything. And I said, yes. So he didn't know there was anything more to it since I was so far away. So he says, all right, come home. I said, what about bail? He says, never mind about bail. Just come home. I'll take care of it. So I came home. I came home, and for all the time I thought they were chasing me all over the countryside, I behaved myself. Yeah, I needed more dresses. Killed me. I didn't own any. Gave me money to go out and buy them. And I think for about 4 or 5 months, I got a job. I did everything he wanted. I was miserable. I was lonely. I you the heck of those kids and let's get the hell out of here. I says, I gotta leave you behind. She said, all right, I'm going. So they moved here, so she worked nights, I worked days. I think this went on for about 6 or 7 months. And then one day I met a girl, just by accident. We were on a bus together and she was coming home from school. And I knew that I might not be able to go through with my father. All the money in the world, all the easy living. Thank you.